Today on The Grave Talks, we continue our conversation about Unknown Elegy with Brad Kennedy, Luke Pilgrim, and Alice Treese. I asked you about paranormal and where y'all stand on that. After diving in to cryptids, Bigfoots, how do you guys feel? I'll start with you again, Brad. How do you guys feel about that now that you've dove into it? Do you feel, especially talking to people, because that's different when you look somebody in the eyes and you can tell, usually we all have a pretty good BS meter, and it's like, this guy really believes what he's saying. Did it kind of change your opinion on the Bigfoots or?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, especially after talking with Scott and Sheila, they had such a genuineness. I mean, not saying like someone like Vic didn't. Vic, I think, more so fit closer to the people I had thought of who are true Bigfoot believers. But, you know, like Scott's a retired cop, you know, it's just a different way they got to the same place that made me go, okay, like it's just because we talked. I mean, it was probably the difference of like five or six months between interviewing Vic, which that was the first time I had met him, and then meeting and filming with Scott and Sheila. And, you know, Vic told us all these stories. He took us out in the woods telling us about structures, you know, the way the trees would fall. And, you know, that's the structure of a Bigfoot, you know. And at first glance, you're thinking, well, couldn't just, you know,
the wind
here, yeah, or the way the wind fell, break the limb to have it form this. And then, you know, you talked to Scott and Sheila, and they never interacted with Vic, or and they end up saying the same stuff, and you're kind of like, okay, you know, there's a little bit more to it there, you know, because it's not, they don't fit the same type of mold of, you know, people who believe in Bigfoot, even though they end up kind of in the same space. And and talking with David at Expedition Bigfoot too, I mean, he was just such an interesting person to interview, because he's kind of that central hub for a lot of this in the documentary, especially on the Bigfoot side of, you know, he hears all these stories. So he not only has his own personal accounts, but he knows, you know, what everyone else has to say and kind of the history and the legacy of what Bigfoot means to the community.
What did you think, Luke?
To me, it's like there's these stories have to come from somewhere. And when you look at like even like Native American, you know, myths or folklore or whatever, like the stories that go back generations of like these hairy or these wild men in the woods or these hairy beasts or whatever, it's like a lot of people might think maybe they were talking about like a bear or whatever, but it's also like they knew what a bear was, you know?
Yeah, right.
So it's like, I'm just like the idea, because the whole thing is that like Bigfoot has such human qualities while also looking like this ape, you know? So to me, I'm just like, there's something to it more than just like, I don't think it's just like wild stories. Like to me, I feel like they came from somewhere. There has to be, you know, some kind of truth to it.
And Alice, you would have seen all the footage and editing. You spend a lot of time with people when you're editing their footage. You know what I mean?
They probably don't even remember me.
Yeah. But when you're editing that, you are really listening and paying attention to everything that's said and the looks on their faces. And, you know, so you have clean edits and it all flows well together. What did you think after experiencing what these people said?
I'm much more of a believer now than I was at the beginning, and I would attribute a lot of that probably to Scott and Sheila the most out of anyone, because like Brad was saying, Scott was a retired cop. He was the biggest skeptic out of anyone he knew. His brother was like kind of the same thing. He's like, you're a military trained individual. I cannot believe you believe in this stuff. And all of that came from Sheila kind of getting him into it. They went out, did their own expedition, and he had his own encounter. And every person he's taken with him since, these groups of people, his brother, they are all skeptical at the start. And by the time they're done with Scott and Sheila, everyone's a believer. And it's just the strength of his character. Like, you know that he's not like BSing you. what he's telling you is what he truly believes happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just that alone has convinced me that there's more out there. Not to mention that when you're watching the edits, every single person will be like telling their own story, their own experience, and you start kind of putting these clues together, like, okay, this person's story happened in this part of LAJ. This person's story happened like 5 miles from that other story in LAJ. And you start to kind of understand that like there's these like hot spots and like pockets of just increased activity that are going on in LAJ. Plus you have more than one person telling you something, so there's got to be some truth behind it.
Right. Now in the next episode, it is the haunting in it's haunting in the hills of LAJ. Mm-hmm. So this is more about paranormal experiences, and you talk with people at the Tabor House, mm-hmm, and River Street Tavern, and both really compelling stories at both locations. Oh, were, yeah, these just kind of, you know, every, especially small towns, they all have, every town though has their ghost stories, and we all kind of know where that's a haunted house, or I heard this story about that place. But these are kind of well known, I'm going to guess, around town as haunted locations, Luke.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people are aware of these, you know, at least, you know, rumblings of these kind of stories. Mm-hmm. And they weren't the only ones, even. There was other ones that people suggested, because we did a lot of, like, outreach online and to see, like, what we could get back, you know. But a lot of, you know, the problem was we had to focus on places that were public, you know, like a place you could actually go. You know, we couldn't really just go to
someone's houses
or these places that also had some compelling ghost stories. But yeah, the Tabor House, I mean, it's, you know, it's like the oldest standing family home or something like that. And it being a museum, now it's pretty cool because you can go on a tour of it and everything. And it definitely has some vibes in it when you're there. Yeah, like the story that Dan, right? Yeah, Dan, mm-hmm, tells a story of, you know, and he's kind of like a no-nonsense guy. He's definitely not someone who's thinking about ghosts very often. But his, you know, story of the young lady who came in and wanted to look around by herself, and she, you know, she, I think she sensed something in the place to begin with. And then upstairs, you know, in that room, you know, like she could sense something. He went back downstairs because he heard a door slam. But when she was leaving, like she, you know, she asked him if that's his little girl up there. And that's, he's just like, oh, I don't have a little girl. And so it's a super spooky and kind of creepy moment that he experienced. And, mm-hmm, and I think he walked away from it definitely a little more open-minded to all of it.
Even the woman, the way she came by and everything, that felt creepy to me.
Yeah.
Like, who is this mysterious woman? And it was almost like he heard the door open and shut, and that drew him away from her. Yeah. So, mm-hmm, then she was able to have that experience because he goes downstairs to see who came in and nobody had come in.
Yeah, and she had just asked if she could spend time in that room alone upstairs.
Yeah.
He says, no, I got to stand in the doorway. And then when the door slams, he does leave her for a little bit. So it's just kind of weird how that happened.
It was a weird story. And even hearing Dan, like, I don't remember how many years prior to the interview that had been, but I mean, you could tell he still kind of gets goosebumps and he's a little just freaked out still when talking about
it. It's like fresh in his mind.
Oh, yeah.
That's for sure.
Because after listening to his story, I was like, did that woman actually exist? Did she really come in? You know?
I had the same thought.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the crazy thing is, like, I don't even think it makes it into the episode, but people would tell us, like, on the front porch, you know, people walking by, because the Tabor House is just right off the square, and people go into the courthouse and, you know, other areas of downtown could see, like, a Confederate soldier just in the windowsill, you know, waving to people.
The story, on the porch.
Yeah, the story from that one was, because there was a couple ghost stories that didn't make it in. That one was, a woman was walking by the Tabor House one day and looked up on the porch, and there was a Confederate soldier just sitting there. And she was like, what are you doing up there? And he responded to her and said, I'm guarding the house.
Yeah.
And she thought it was a reenactor.
Yeah, like just someone who was like dressed up like for the house.
You know, we were just talking about that like yesterday or the day before about how many times, you know, people have gone to a Civil War battlefield or museum and thought they saw a reenactor and then come to find out there was no reenactors that day. And that, didn't the Tabor House, in the room where the woman saw the little girl, didn't he refer to that as the Civil War room?
Yeah.
And those are the two main ghosts of the house that they know of, is there's a little girl and a Confederate soldier that is attached to something in the house.
Makes me want to go. I don't want to do a paranormal investigation. That's not for me. I just want to go tour the house.
Yeah.
Because I would love that very much.
Well, that was the same for us. We were like a little scared to full on try to contact any spirit or things like that.
We didn't want to go anywhere at night.
Yeah, we were more like, we wanted to tell people stories and their experiences a lot more than we really wanted to encounter it ourselves.
Get haunted.
Yeah.
That's me. I would much rather talk about it than go out and do an investigation. I will take my recorder to a haunted house when we do a tour of it, but I'm not going to be there overnight doing the investigation.
Yeah.
Well, there was a second story in that room too that was like just as creepy, where Doug, who's one of the he kind of like runs the tours and the museum, his previous boss who did it before him, she was giving a tour to this family, and they made it up to the Civil War room, and there was a daughter in the group, and she's like, I don't believe in ghosts. And the second that she said that, a picture frame flew off the wall and landed right next to her feet. And she was like, oh, I believe. She's like, I believe.
Whoa. Everybody with her believed at that moment.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't have to ask us twice about this. We believe. There's another place, the River Street Tavern, which looks, by the way, a really cool bar. Like, I would like to go have a beer there. It just has it. I like the way it's laid out. It's just like, looks like it's been there for 100 years. It's just cool looking.
Okay. Yeah.
Cause it does. It's got that really old bar. It just, it's really cool. And so there are like the girls you first talked to there, and they still work there currently, but they're like, I do not want to go upstairs. Nope. Not by myself ever. No.
Yeah.
And it was like everybody had an experience, and then somebody wrote to you about an experience that she had.
Yeah. That one was very weird because, like, it was someone sent us that story, and it was on behalf of their friend. So,
because they didn't want to send it.
They didn't want to send it. And so it was actually a guy who sent it in on behalf of his friend. She told him he could send it in, but not, they asked us not to use her name. And then, you know, we couldn't verify like who this person really was, if she worked there even.
Yeah, we talked to the owner. And, you know, we talked to other people who worked there, the managers, and they could never.
Well, they have a lot of turnover too. Yeah. I mean, it's a restaurant. A lot of people work there and come and go and all that. So it was really hard to verify the story. But I mean, the story was so compelling. We were like, we have to include it. You know, we filmed the reenactment and everything like that there. And when you're, even when we're doing that kind of stuff, we were, I was like, we're like a little spooked out, like afraid of when you're filming the reenactment, you're like trying to be like, I don't want to accidentally offend a ghost.
Exactly. And nobody was in there when you were filming some of those scenes.
There were only a handful of people. Right. Us, the actress, and then maybe Rob, the manager, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, there wasn't. And there was a moment, like, we got a little bit of footage that makes it into the finished episode, but I know we went upstairs to film a little bit where they talked about, you know, we interviewed both those employees, and they're like, we do not want to go upstairs. And that was probably one of the moments that freaked me out the most.
Yeah.
Being up there, it just felt weird. And it was, you know, like 10, 11 a.m. in the morning. You know, it just, and it still felt kind of creepy. So I couldn't imagine having to go up there and do stuff by yourself at night. That would have been so scary to do.
In that story, she talked about a woman who had supposedly been hanged outside behind the building or something.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about that, Ellis?
Yeah. I don't. Did we make? I believe her name was Eliza.
Yes, I think it was.
Yeah. And she was a old historical like member of LJ. What happened to her was, I want to say she was caught stealing, and then she was hung out back. Supposedly, she still haunts the building because it was directly behind River Street Tavern. And her spirit's just been attached to that place ever since. Supposedly, she's slightly malicious and angry.
Well,
yeah, and we don't.
They like, did hang her.
Yeah.
Like the hanging too. Like it's kind of, that's a hard. It's hard to verify that even. You know, mm-hmm. like if we, you know, we're kind of basing all this on this story that we were given, but.
But we do know, like, some of the history. I mean, that area, which it's just down the street from the Tabor House, like, mm-hmm. in the late 1800s, you know, post-Civil War and also during the Civil War, LJ was kind of just, like, it was kind of a Wild West bound mm-hmm. in the way, even though it was in the East. It just, there was a lot of lawlessness there.
Yeah, violence.
And violence.
So yeah, I remember.
All of it makes sense historically.
Yeah, I remember Andrew Roach from Hemlock Bazaar was telling the story, and this didn't make it into the edit, but he was explaining the history behind LJ, and it was a super rough and tumble part of the world, and like during the Civil War era, there would be people who would be like, oh, you know, I'm going to go fight for the Confederacy, or I'm not going to fight for the Confederacy, and then you would have people that you've known your entire life who have an opposing view to you come up and just shoot you and kill you, like, or they would just shoot into your house. Maybe they'd hit your wife, you know? And, it's just during that time, there was so much friction between the two opposing sides, mm-hmm. not to mention the Trail of Tears started in LJ. Mm-hmm. And so that alone is just grounds for, you know, the paranormal, because yeah. there was so much bloodshed that happened in this town.
Which, and it's so tragic. The whole Trail of Tears. It's mm-hmm. like, go here. Nope. We want that. Yeah. Now go there. Nope. We want that. Yeah. Now go yeah. there. It's just, it's really sad.
Yeah, it's horrific.
And, you know, at the time, you know, there are people writing journals and things like that, perhaps. But like the story of Eliza, that's not anything they would have wanted to document necessarily.
Yeah. Right.
And
exactly.
They would have carried that out quickly. Maybe there was some kind of trial, but if they found her guilty, you know, all of that beginning to end could have been a couple days.
Yeah. Yeah. It could have, exactly. It could have been just, you know, maybe it wasn't even done by the, you know, officials. It was somebody hung this woman. Like, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. who knows what could have happened back then?
Well, yeah. I think Dan had talked about there had only been one public hanging in the city of LJ when he was telling his story. So, if Eliza, because it wasn't Eliza that was the public hanging.
Right.
So if she's hung behind this building, it was definitely not the officials that did it.
Yeah.
It was someone else who did it.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of a weird place to have a gallows or whatever anyways. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It almost makes me think, this is just my gut, that it had nothing to do with stealing. Like they were accused her of something. You know, she had been caught cheating or something that they just couldn't respect. And the man, maybe her husband, felt wronged by it. And there you go. And that was that. And then I could see if you were to die, and even if she had stole something, who knows what the reason was, I could see why you'd be pretty pissed off about that. In the afterlife, it was like, there's no justice. I can never rest in peace because they did this to me. But I also don't want to be angry for eternity. It's just
for real.
Somebody needs to help poor Eliza because that's a lot. Yeah,
I know.
Now, when July 12th rolls around, because that's when the episodes will start releasing on July 12th, one a week. And the third one you said is about a cemetery there?
And Dog Man. That's so a big how
did,
part of it.
And you can just tease this because I haven't seen it, but how did that end up in the cemetery story?
Well, for some reason, there's this connection with cemeteries and Dog Man. At least sightings tend to happen around cemeteries of this, like, this canine type cryptid that's standing on two legs, you know, it's for all intents and purposes, it's like a werewolf or something, mm-hmm. you know, because like a lot of people aren't super familiar with Dogman, and like even all of us were not.
Yeah, you know, I had no clue what it was.
Yeah. But. And like I'd heard a little bit about it just from like listening to a paranormal podcast or things like that. But yeah, for some reason, some people think Dogman is like maybe a protector of these like cemeteries, or maybe, you know, some people think it's like the gates, you know, to the other side or something. And he's somehow protecting that or I don't know, keeping like things from crossing away. Over or whatever. Yeah.
Did you think when you were going to do the episode, were you going into it like, this is a haunted cemetery, and then it took a sharp left turn into Dogman Land, or did you kind of know?
It was more like the craziest thing was the initial pitch was it would be Bigfoot, ghost, and UFOs, and there was not really much UFO stories in LJ, so we decided, okay, maybe we pivot, and the pivot was, okay, explore cemeteries and the weird, unusual history of Gilmer County, LJ, Georgia, and that, us getting to the cemeteries eventually kind of connected into the Dogman, and it kind of, the neat thing about that episode is it probably ends up being the most organic of the ones where we are figuring it out in real time, kind of the way the story goes and how all this weaves in with LJ.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm going to look forward to that because, you know, they're shorter docuseries. Mm-hmm. They're short. They're not like 30 minutes to an hour. Mm-hmm. But now that I've seen them, you guys could go into long form because it was very compelling and very interesting.
Awesome. Thank cool. you.
Yeah,
we appreciate that.
A great
that.
Compliment. Yeah, we would love to probably expand them into bigger. You know, we just kind of knew what we could pull off, and you mm-hmm. know, starting a little smaller was the easiest way to get the story told.
But mm-hmm. it was they're really well done, and I think you found some really interesting people to talk to, like the guy at the bookstore or Bigfoot store. It was kind of an eclectic sort of store that he had.
Is that the coffee shop? Hemlock Bazaar?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's super interesting. He owns that place. And it's just cool that he has all these coffees that are named after cryptids. You know, they've got the, like a skunk ape one or the squonk or whatever. So it's just kind of a cool eclectic place, like you said.
I mean, LJ is a really cool place to visit. And I mean, obviously we were going at it, you know, kind of being connected with the tourism wing, but you know, we were able to stay at a lot of unique cabins and places like that. We were, you know, we went to a bunch of restaurants in our time for it and got to know the people there, and it's a really cool place to explore and hang out, and I think in some ways we probably just scratched the surface. My hope is we release these and the people there go, oh, now that we know that this wasn't just, you know, some made up thing, I have the story to tell about my experience, you know, and there's more to dig into from that.
And these episodes will build the trust with those people. Because they're like, oh, we all know Sheila and now I can't remember his name.
Scott. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're like, we know them and we trust them and they were respectful.
And our goal is never to like make anyone look stupid or make anyone feel bad, or you know, like we're here to like tell their story to the best of our ability.
Yeah.
So they come out on July the 12th, and I will put a link on the show notes to the YouTube channel as well as your Just So-So Bear Film website, so people could kind of see what you guys do as well. So I'll put both links there. But three total episodes, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm going to look forward to number three because I have not seen that yet, unless you guys want to send it to me.
We're still finishing it.
Okay.
We will.
Okay, send it when you're done. Well, Alice, Brad, and Luke, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. And congratulations on the videos. They're very well done.
Thank you so much, Carol.
that wraps up our conversation with Brad Kennedy, Luke Pilgrim, and Ellis Treese about their docuseries, Unknown Elegy. Get more information on their website, SozoBearFilms.com, and watch the series on their YouTube channel. Just search Sozo Bear Films. You can find both links in the show notes. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, then become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts where you can try it for 3 days free, and you can also sign up at patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you very much for listening.